It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
And Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, first of all, happy 4th of July.
Happy Independence Day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's got everyone in a little bit of a throw this week with it being on a Wednesday.
Yes.
We don't know whether to work Monday and Tuesday or work Thursday and Friday or just not work at all
there
or
you
work
go.
All week. Lots of options. Ben, you know, the theme of our program for many, many years now, 20 years or more, mm-hmm. has been, you know, to demystify the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what Wes and I are going to do today and probably move into this same topic next week. And that's just the topic of foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very misunderstood area of the law. Our listeners are listening. And, of course, you know, foreclosure, many people think, well, okay, there's a foreclosure. That's the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
The house goes back to the lender. I am
out.
I'm out. Of course, that's the debtor side of things. There's also, you know, all sorts of other issues we're going to talk about, but it's not that simple.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of nuances out there relative to foreclosure and a great and significant body of law. And we do have to begin by, and Wes will help us here, we do have to begin by kind of structuring our conversation from either the debtor's perspective or the creditor's perspective or just the independent person who mm-hmm. is out there attempting to buy in, if mm-hmm. you will, during a foreclosure. So there are multiple parties here with multiple interests, and we'll have to kind of keep that in mind as we have our conversation.
Okay.
So, you know, when we're talking about foreclosure, I mean, this is really all about collateral mm-hmm. is what it's about. I mean, and, you know, what that is, obviously, is that if someone is a bank or whatever is going to loan you money, then they want to have their hands on something, their grips on something that they can take back in the event that you,
right.
you default.
Right.
So, you know, in the world of loans on vehicles, for example, the vehicle can be repossessed
mm-hmm.
or there can be a claim in delivery. We can get the vehicle back and then go through the process of selling the vehicle and paying off the loan mm-hmm. and dealing with it that way. When we're dealing with real property, though, the legal process is the foreclosure process. And, you know, in North Carolina and really in all states, we have a particular set of statutes that deal just with foreclosures.
And foreclosure basically just being defined as kind of like the last resort between the creditor and the lender and the homeowner.
That's right. Yeah. So if you're in a situation, you know, where you have not been able to make payments, you're in default, then obviously the bank, the lender is going to be contacting you and sending you letters and these type things, and that will go on for a period of time. Seems like that's one of the first questions, how long do I have before they foreclose? I mean, maybe
right.
6 months, something like that. Normally, sometimes shorter, sometimes longer. But then once the process starts, then normally what happens is the lender then contacts an attorney, a law firm, to handle the foreclosure itself.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually a substitution of trustee because the trustee is the fiduciary, the person who's responsible for foreclosing on the property consistent with North Carolina law.
Mm-hmm. So they have to transfer that power to someone to do that.
They basically. Don't have to transfer. They can do that themselves. But normally when they hire a law firm, the law firm acts as the trustee.
Right.
In many cases, or in some right. cases, the trustee doesn't change and just the law firm is acting on behalf of the trustee.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. that can be different depending on, you know, a case-by-case basis. So, you know, the foreclosure process basically starts, you know, with the notice, and there's really four primary things that we look at in mm-hmm. order to determine whether we have the right to foreclose. And you have to understand, Ben, that foreclosure in North Carolina, in most cases, is a very quick remedy
mm-hmm.
because the law supports the lender to not have to file a full blown lawsuit in order to get their property back.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the things we're looking at is there were a power of sale in the deed of trust. And when I say deed of trust, that's like the mortgage document, the document that goes on title. It's the document that serves as the lien on the property. It's, you know, if you go search someone's property, title search, and see if there's any liens on it, well, if a deed of trust pops up, then that's right. your mortgage document. And that's what the Wells Fargo or the First Citizens or whoever has made the loan, you know, puts on record in order to have that right to foreclose in the event of default of that underlying promissory note, that loan. Mm-hmm. So we look at, again, the four things. Is there that power of sale? And that's the quick remedy. Mm-hmm. That's the power of sale, quick foreclosure before the clerk of court.
Okay.
And again, here we are right before the clerk of court. We're always before the clerk of court.
Yeah, that's right.
So many of these things we deal with. They have a very important job. So power of sale. Is there a valid debt?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a default of that debt? And has proper notice been given to everyone who's entitled to notice?
Right.
So those are the main things that the clerk of court is going to look at to enter an order requiring the property to then be sold.
Mm-hmm.
And a foreclosure sale, a lot of people know, courthouse steps.
Mm-hmm.
There's a notice of sale. That's when it takes place, or it might get extended. A lot of times they get extended for whatever reason. There's a bid in, and then there's an upset bid process, the 10-day process. So basically what happens is that normally the lender is going to bid in first.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to decide what their first bid is going to be. And normally it's going to be, you know, the debt, because they're just going to take the property back and then resell it.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that bid gets upset by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And then when there's that, you know, the highest bid, and then there's that report to the clerk of court that here's the highest bid at the foreclosure sale, then there's a 10-day period of time in order to come forward and upset that bid by 5% or $750, whichever is more. And every time there's a higher bid that upsets the last bid, that extends that 10-day period.
Right.
So it's not like you can swing into the courthouse steps. Somebody steal the property and it's all over.
Yeah.
The way the statute works is obviously to get the most we can, you know, for the property.
It goes back to that highest and best used idea.
That's right.
It's still a predominant theme
in
North Carolina law. Now when the lender is now has foreclosed and they are bidding back on it, is it always at the price of what's owed? I mean, is that what's being offered here?
Usually.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the default.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to look at the value of the property. We have to look at the equity. We have to look at, you know, a lot of issues with regard to the property, and the bank then analyzes, you know, generally what is the property worth? Mm-hmm. What's the condition of the property? You know, do we want to take the property back on our books and resell it? I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that equation for the bank to make or the lender to make that determination. Mm-hmm. So certainly, you know, over the years, especially back in
2008,
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, where there's just, we had tons of foreclosures.
Everything was upside down.
I would say most of the time we did not bid in for our lenders, at the debt amount. It was normally a different amount. It was a case by case basis, but it's, as you say, everything was a little upside down. So a lot of times you have problems with regard to the amount being owed on the property that was more or significantly more than the value of the property.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to take that into consideration. Things have very much leveled out now. So, you know, we don't really have that issue so much. So we're kind of back to status quo as far as normally, if you're looking at a foreclosure, the amount that's owed on the property or on the loan normally is going to be less than that fair market value of the property. Mm-hmm. Because obviously the lender is not going to go, you know, loan $300,000 on a $100,000 piece of property.
Right.
You know, they're going to, you know, be at 70, 80, maybe 90% of the, you know, loan to value.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't normally go too much higher than that. That's why the banks want money down.
Right.
You know, they want to have some equity.
Yeah. So, but a lot of people want to go in. They think they can go in because this property has increased in value, and what's owed on it is significantly lower than what the value is on it. So,
or it's increased in value. That could be one thing, or it could be that the person has been paying on it for a long period of time and gotten the loan down, mm-hmm. but has come on hard times.
Right.
And just can't pay. So yeah, a lot of times folks want to get involved in these foreclosure sales, you know, to try to get the bargain. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of bargains out there if you pay attention to what you're doing, but there are a lot of pitfalls too.
Mm-hmm.
We've had many cases over the years where folks have thought that they've gotten a great deal to foreclosure because they bought the $200,000 property for $75,000 and they're just elated about it. Got a good deal.
Right.
And then they find out, uh-oh, there's another deed of trust on the property.
Yeah.
We just bought the property and we stepped into the shoes of this other loan.
Yeah.
We've got to pay this other loan.
Because
if we don't pay this other loan, we're going to get foreclosed on.
Not every loan comes up, right, at the same time on the foreclosure.
Anyone can foreclose who has the deed of trust.
Correct.
It could be the first, second, third, fourth, fifth.
Right.
The key, of course, is for the potential person who's buying in to have a complete and thorough title examination made mm-hmm. to see what they're buying.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They know about the deed of trust that is under foreclosure. They know about that.
Right. But
what are the other things that we don't know about?
Right.
And you cannot go into these matters without knowing everything there is to know about that property.
Okay.
Assessments, liens, material liens, I mean, any kind of judgment.
We'll come back to that in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Your questions are welcome at 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak and Let's Talk Legal, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. If you want to ask questions, especially about foreclosures we're talking about, we've been dealing generally from the lender side. We want to fill that out a little bit more because we're talking about some of the other things that show up.
Right.
Besides just the what's being foreclosed.
Well, right. What Cecil was talking about before we went to break was, you know, you need to know if you're going to bid in on property what you're buying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, I was talking about earlier, you know, vehicles, you know, repossession. Well, if you go buy a car, you can kind of go look at the car.
You pretty much have one and one lender there.
Right. So. You got a lender. You can get the title very easily. You can see if they're, you know, is someone going to hand you that title or not, free and clear? You know, so it's a little bit more easily transparent.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about real property, you know, you have to do the title search
mm-hmm.
because if you're going to bid in on this property, you're buying the property as it's advertised in that notice of sale.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be, you know, subject to, well, probably in the notice of sale is going to say subject to liens, subject to encumbrances, subject to, you know, these type things. So it could be that the bank or lender that's foreclosing on the property is the second or the third
mm-hmm.
or even the fourth. It could be the equity line. They could be down the line. So if they're the second lender, meaning it's the second deed of trust, meaning the second that was recorded in order
right.
in time,
right.
then that's going to knock out the third and the fourth, but it's not going to knock out the first.
Mm-hmm.
So you just bought this property and you bought it free and clear of the second, third, and fourth because those were knocked out. The foreclosure knocked out the second and the third and the fourth, but not the first.
Mm-hmm.
So you're buying a problem. You're buying someone else's debt. And usually, which of these loans is the highest? The first.
Mm-hmm. Is that always the case, though? I mean, or is it by time, by when it's foreclosed on? I mean, is the first
mm-hmm.
deed of trust or is the always going to be the highest one?
No. It's not going to be the highest, but normally that's like your loan that you got to buy
your
the property.
Yeah.
You know, the second might be, well, I built up some equity. I got an appraisal that said
right.
the property was worth more. I pulled some more equity out of the property. It could be an equity line,
mm-hmm.
home equity line, where we did some improvements to the property.
Mm-hmm.
But normally your first deed of trust is going to be, you know, the one that was used to actually purchase the property.
Right.
So in most cases, you're going to see the amount that's due is going to be the most on that first.
Okay.
But the bottom line, whether it's you know, $5,000 is due or $500,000 is due. No one wants to buy someone else's debt, and no one wants to buy something they didn't know that they were buying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it being a detriment to the property.
Right, right.
So, again, like what Cecil said, before you go into a foreclosure sale and you start making bids, you've got to get that title work. You have mm-hmm. to know what you're buying.
Right.
So that's vital.
These liens been, I mean, you know, materialman's lien, mm-hmm. Internal Revenue Service liens, liens for child support.
Right.
Judgments.
Judgments.
Yeah. Yeah.
These all
homeowners
attack
associations.
Homeowners association back yeah. dues, assessments that are unpaid.
Mm-hmm.
These attach to the property.
Mm-hmm.
And so goes the property, goes the lien. So, you know, there is a, there are a lot of potential liens out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so a buyer has to, if someone bidding in, looking for that deal, great, wonderful, we'll help you with it. But you have to have a title examination. You mm-hmm. have to look at these things, these issues.
Right. You don't
and
do it last minute.
You also are just like a buyer, all the same things that we've talked about on the program before, the whole caveat emptor.
Mm-hmm.
What condition is the property?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, is there mold? Is there asbestos? Are there environmental issues? Has there been illegal dumping?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of the same kinds of issues that you have to look at when you are in the position of a buyer. And yes, you're looking for a deal, and we understand that, but you're a buyer. So caveat emptor, buyer mm-hmm. beware.
Yeah, and you say all the property is described by its meets and bounds, and then you go and take a look at it, and you find out that somebody's been using the back quarter acre of your
right.
for 20, 30
That's
years.
That's right. You might, you know, it's a good idea to drive by the property you're going to buy as mm-hmm. well. Maybe look at as much as you can. You might not be able to get inside of it,
mm-hmm.
but you might be able to get a general idea about whether there are any encroachments. You might mm-hmm. be able to go online at the tax website and look at the aerial photograph, and that will kind of generally show you the property lines. And mm-hmm. if it looks like the neighbor's fence or driveway or whatever mm-hmm. is on the property for over 5 or 10 feet or however amount, whatever amount that might be, you might decide not to buy that.
Right.
You know, so
because of all the things you'd have to do to straighten that out.
Well, that's right. Due yeah. diligence.
Yeah.
Yep. So then you look at it, you know, from the perspective also, we've been talking kind of like more along the lines of the lender and then the potential buyer.
Right.
Now, what about the person being foreclosed on? Mm-hmm. What about the person who is the debtor in this situation?
Okay, let's take a break. We'll come back to that in just a moment. If you have a question, perhaps you've been in that situation, 800-818-2255, or you can call Kinsey on these local numbers.
Yes, sir, at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And welcome back. We're talking about foreclosures here with Harvell and Collins on Let's Talk Legal. And now from the consumer's point of view, the one who
right,
got in the
so
house
the
originally.
Guy who is getting foreclosed on. You know, one of the first things that you deal with in this is the possibility of a deed in lieu of foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And folks are very confused about that. What in the world is a deed in lieu? I don't know what that means. What does it mean that, you know, the bank wants me to sign this deed so that I guess they get the property back and that ends it? And that's kind of what it is. You have the opportunity, instead of the bank going through this process of foreclosing on the property and appointing the trustee and going through the clerk hearings and all this type stuff, to just convey the property back to the lender.
Mm-hmm.
And that is given in lieu of this foreclosure proceeding.
Right.
But there are a lot of pitfalls with regard to that. The main one is that just because you give the property back doesn't mean that the bank is not going to sue you for the deficiency.
Right, because they turn around and sell it, and they don't
That's
get
right.
as much for it as what's
That's owed. Right, that's right. Yeah. Let's say it's a, you know, a
Short sale.
Well, let's say it's a situation where they only get half of what you owe out of it. Well, then the deficiency is half of the amount that you owed. So they have the right to sue you under the note for that.
Mm-hmm.
So in many cases, the lenders will negotiate on that issue to the point where they will waive the deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things as the attorney, when we're representing the debtor that we're dealing with and looking at as it relates to a deed in lieu. A deed in lieu normally that's provided to a debtor early on is not going to have language in it that waives the deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
But as the attorney for the debtor, we want to see that because we're not going to give the property back voluntarily if you're going to just turn around and sue us.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give the property back to you because, look, bank, we're going to save you a lot of money by giving you this back. Because you're not going to have to pay you're not going to have to pay a trustee.
Right.
You're not going to have to pay attorney's fees.
Discount.
You're not going to have to go through all these things.
Yeah.
So we want this waiver of deficiency in the document. And if that's in there, then we'll sign the document and then all bets are off. You get the property back, but we're free and clear. Now there may be tax consequences with regard to that, but you know, it's kind of hard to avoid the tax man.
Yeah.
But that's better than owing the entire amount of the deficiency.
Yeah.
So that deed in lieu situation is something that, again, can be a pitfall for folks where, and I've seen it many times before the years, where folks sign the deed in lieu. They're even told on the phone by the lender, hey, you go ahead and sign this and get back to us, it's all over. Well, 3 months later, they get served with a summons and complaint for, you know, however much, $100,000 for the deficiency.
Is there a magic bullet number about what generally a lender will forgive? Like 20% or anything like that?
I wish there were. I mean, I have no idea. You know, it's different from case to case with regard to that. I mean, some lenders, I can tell you pre 07, 08 in that range before it got to be, you know, a lot of foreclosures going on. And even right in that time, every lender filed a deficiency action.
Huh.
I mean, even if it was 20, 25, 30,000, they'd still file a deficiency action. In my opinion, it got to maybe in 2011, 12, 13, where they just decided in many cases it was a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that maybe we'd see deficiency actions in 20% of the foreclosures, even though there was a loss and there was a deficiency. You know, the other thing with regard to the deficiency, there's a very short statute of limitations with regard to that in the event there's a foreclosure. It's only 1 year.
Huh.
So after the foreclosure is complete, the lender would only have 1 year in order to file that deficiency action. So that statute of limitations is absolute. We've had cases over the years where an individual was foreclosed upon. They thought it was over. Deficiency action hits. They get sued for that. But the lawsuit was filed later than a year from the foreclosure.
I would imagine it would depend on when the property sold.
Right. It does. And we were able to raise a 12B motion right from the beginning based on statute of limitations or a summary judgment, I can't remember, on multiple occasions, and boom, case over.
Okay. It can get complicated. That's why you need the folks who have the right advice at the right time. Call on Harvell and Collins, Attorneys of Law at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street, and online at harvellandcollins.com.